This fall, the first class of students born after 9/11 are beginning college, and in recent months, the first applicants to the New York City Fire Department began applying to join the ranks of a department still haunted by the loss of 343 of its members. Similarly, the first military recruits born after 9/11 began in recent months to be deployed to the wars the attacks launched and to Guantanamo Bay to guard the Al-Qaeda prisoners captured on battlefields before they were born. This morning, we meet Garrett Graff, author of the new book, The Only Plane in the Sky, an oral history of 9/11. It's the first comprehensive oral history of that day from hundreds of oral histories with government officials, first responders, survivors, family members, and more. As 9/11 shifts from memory to history, even while we continue to fight in wars that began as a consequence to that day's events, the narrative told is in the voices of those who lived it. Garrett Graff is a magazine journalist and historian. He has spent more than a dozen years covering politics, technology, and national security. He's written for publications such as Wired and the New York Times, and has also served as the editor of both the Washingtonian and Politico magazines. Again, the name of the new book is The Only Plane in the Sky, an oral history of 9/11, and we welcome Garrett Graff to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program, sir.
Thanks for having me to talk about this today.
What brought on this project of wanting to talk to so many people about what happened on that day?
Well, as you laid out, we are still very much living in the world created by 9/11, sort of as so much of the geopolitics and national politics today was spawned and driven and shaped by the decisions made after 9/11. And yet, as we see 9/11 shift from memory to history, what I fear we might lose is the understanding of what that day was really like to experience. That when we say never forget now, what we mostly remember are the facts of the day, the four planes, the Twin Towers, Pentagon, Shanksville. And what we are beginning to forget is really just what it was like to live through that day. So the goal with this book is not to tell sort of the facts of the day, it's to tell the experience of the day. So the book follows 480 Americans coast to coast, morning to night. Not just the Twin Towers in the Pentagon and in Shanksville, but in air traffic control towers, what it was like to be a passenger or crew member aboard the planes flying that day, as well as following the president aboard Air Force One and those in the White House bunker and on Capitol Hill who were trying to respond to these unfolding attacks.
The book is broken up by different, by basically places and different things of whether it be inside air traffic control or on the second plane or someone who's live on the air or on Capitol Hill. I would think once you start that, I imagine it is sort of a free flow of, okay, these are all of the various places that we could go to, and then either adding to it, subtracting from it, and then saying, all right, let's find the people who can tell us this story.
Absolutely. And, you know, the story that we now tell about 9/11, you know, the facts of the day that the whole attack took place in 102 minutes from that first crash to the collapse of the second tower, it's a much neater and cleaner story than what those days were actually like to experience on 9/11 and thereafter. Because remember, we didn't know that the attacks were over at 10:29 when that second tower fell. And so the book really tries to capture that chaos, that trauma, that confusion over the day as it unfolds. As people worried about other hijacked planes well into the late afternoon, you know, there were planes still in the sky at 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. And we all wondered and feared whether there were another round of Al-Qaeda sleeper cells poised for further attacks that day, the next day, or in the weeks or months ahead. So this was really a day that was much more traumatic in some respects to experience than we remember.
So in one of the chapters, you bring us to Emma Booker Elementary School. This is the school where President George W. Bush learns of the attack. The people that we read about in that chapter, are those interviews recent interviews, or were they things that these individuals said at the time? Meaning, how fresh was it, and or is it looking back over 15, 16, 18 years past?
It's both. Some of those interviews are contemporaneous or nearly contemporaneous. Some of them I did years after the fact. And the goal for it is, you know, the President of the United States, it's really sort of amazing to go back and look at his day on 9/11. As you said, he started at Emma Booker Elementary School in Sarasota, Florida, goes off aboard Air Force One after the second crash, hustled aboard the plane, and they fly around the southeastern United States, first to Barksdale, Louisiana, then on to Offutt Air Force Base in Nebraska, before finally declaring that it was safe for the president at the end of the day to return to Washington. But the tension and confusion aboard that plane, I thought, was really fascinating to explore that day. Because the president, you know, this was 2001. There were not the modern technologies and communications tools that we are used to. And so the president of the United States was, he didn't have email aboard the plane. He didn't have satellite or cable TV. And instead was relying on the old rabbit ears antennas to catch local news as they flew over the United States. And local news would sort of fade in and out as they flew over urban cities. And it's just incredible to realize that in 2001, on 9/11, the President of the United States was less informed for most of the day than the average American sitting at home watching TV on CNN.
Obviously, we say never forget, and we can all remember where we were and what was happening. And yet, in reading the book, we realize how much we either didn't ever know, or that we have forgotten of what unfolded, as you so rightly pointed out a moment ago, in a relatively short period of time.
Yes, and remember, you know, it took quite some time to realize that we were even under attack. You know, that to realize that these hijackings were not sort of your run-of-the-mill hijackings. I mean, for that first hour, as the hijackings began to unfold, you know, the airlines were trying to cooperate. The air traffic controllers were trying to cooperate, because that's the standard protocols at that time for those hijackings. And that this was, you see sort of this incredible innocence after the first crash at 8:46 into the North Tower, where the sort of most of America sort of looks at it and doesn't default to terrorism. Sort of people assume it's an aviation accident, a problem with air traffic control, the pilot having a heart attack, and that this was, it really wasn't until that second crash into the South Tower that you began to see Americans realize that this was a terrorist incident. And when we say, you know, 9/11 changed everything, it's hard to remember just how innocent America actually was that first Tuesday morning in September in 2001. I mean, I tell the story in the book of one of the ferry captains in New York Harbor who watches the first crash, proceeds around to Lower Manhattan, and every passenger on his boat gets off and walks into Lower Manhattan to go to work as papers and envelopes flutter down from the struck tower above. You know, now you see that video last month of the motorcycle backfiring in Times Square, right, and everybody runs for their lives. You know, we expect today to default to terrorism, to default to an attack or a shooting, and that just really wasn't where America was in 2001.
The name of the book is The Only Plane in the Sky, an oral history of 9/11. It is published by Avid Reader Press. Garrett Graff is the author. Obviously, some of these are indeed obvious. As far as the other people, how did you find them, of the average person who happened to be there at a particular place at a particular time?
Yeah. So, and this was part of what was so fascinating about this project was the there were a number of institutions, both public and private, that in the weeks, months, and years after 9/11 had the good sense to go out and collect these oral histories. The 9/11 Memorial Museum in New York, the 9/11 Tribute Center, the Pentagon historian, the Capitol Hill historian, the Flight 93 National Memorial. And so I found, as I started this project, about 2,000 existing oral histories that I was able to draw upon, in addition to the several hundred of memories and stories that I collected myself over the course of this project. And the result is, sort of through whittling all of that down, is these 480 voices spread across the country in every time zone, almost every state, what it was like to be a school child on 9/11, what it was like to be one of the guards at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier that day. And then, of course, the words of astronaut Frank Culbertson, who was the one American off the planet Earth on 9/11 aboard the International Space Station and was able to look down and see this collapse of the second tower from outer space.
One of the things that I find so fascinating about the book and why it's so powerful is that it looks at just that day. It doesn't give us a whole the history of 9/11 and what happened afterwards. It brings us from that morning to that night, and that's where the book ends, at the end of the day. And it was a long day, but it is fascinating because there's a context there of just what we knew at that time.
Exactly. And again, I think that to me was one of the most interesting things. You know, I lived that day. I was a student in college on 9/11, and I had forgotten just how confusing so much of that day was. I mean, the rumors that spread over the course of that day, the car bombing at the State Department, another hijacked plane crashing in Cleveland. I mean, sort of all of these things that we believed over the course of the day that, of course, we now know are false and have been sort of written out of our memories. But, you know, there was real terror throughout much of the country that day that the attacks were going to hit, you know, places far beyond New York, Shanksville, and the Pentagon.
I will ask some more specifics in a second, but just the title of the book, The Only Plane in the Sky, how did you come to that?
So it's a quote about the Air Force One as it made its way back to Washington at the end of the day. Mm. That by that point, of course, all of the planes, all of the commercial planes had been grounded in the United States. The skies were empty, and the Air Force One flying back from Offutt, along with a couple of fighters escorting it, was effectively the only plane left in the sky in the United States.
The other thing that I found fascinating is, as I said, it's all in one day, but, you know, the our reaction at night was very different than our reaction in the afternoon. And, of course, in the morning, as compared to the morning, as the events were unfolding. But that time that you write about and so many people talk about at night, of that is when it really started to sink in for a lot of people. You read that in many of your accounts, that it was at nighttime when people just finally had a moment to reflect on what the hell had happened.
Exactly. And that this was, this was a global catastrophe in a way that America and the world has never really experienced before or since. Most Americans, especially by that afternoon and into the evening, were clustered around their televisions watching this all unfold in real time, and that we were sort of all learning together about the scale and the scope of 9/11 and where it was unfolding and exactly what had transpired where.
What do you make and what do you think it means by the 9/11 generation?
So this was the chapter in the book that just looks at the experience of being a child or college student on 9/11, which I found as I was doing this, 9/11 for a certain aged person for many of them, ends up being their first memory and what it was like and sort of what the events of 9/11 were like refracted really through a child's perspective of the adult's reactions around them. You know, that so many children sort of understood that something terrible was unfolding, but didn't, of course, know exactly what it was, couldn't grasp the details of it. Talking to children who, didn't even know where New York was, didn't know what the Twin Towers were, and sort of what it was like to try to understand that and understand that their country was under attack. One of the children I quote in the book, she says, "This was the first time that I realized that bad things could happen to good people for no reason," which is just such a profound realization to be forced upon a child.
You have a six-year-old in the book saying, "All the adults seemed weird. They were all on edge and something was wrong. Everything was so quiet." And it just seemed that, yes, there was something going on, and even though they don't know what's going on, they know that it's very, very serious just by being in the room around that.
Remember, schools in much of the country were canceled or let out early on the East Coast, canceled altogether on the West Coast. This was an attack that rippled across the country and touched lives, very, very far from the attacks themselves.
When you look at the book as a whole and what of what it tells us about that day, do you think it will be radically different in another 18 years?
I imagine it will be. One of the things that we're already seeing, as you mentioned, is a generation of American servicemen and women beginning to deploy to the wars spawned by 9/11 in Iraq and Afghanistan, who have no meaningful memory of those attacks and who, beginning this year, may have even been born after the attacks, and that this is still in so many ways, though, a world that on a daily basis is living with the consequences of 9/11, even as the memory recedes.
The name of the book is The Only Plane in the Sky, an oral history of 9/11. It is published by Avid Reader Press. Again, Garrett, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for the discussion.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is The Only Plane in the Sky, an oral history of 9/11. Garrett Graff is the author. The book is published by Avid Reader Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.